this episode, I talk with my friend and host of the Soul Knox podcast, Carl Hakara. We go over our top 10 favorite supernatural horror films. After you're done with this episode, make sure you check out my fellow horsemen of the podcast, Apocalypse, Everything Went Black podcast, Into the Necrosphere, The Necromaniacs podcast, Iblis Manifestations, and the Soul Knox podcast. Thanks so much and hope you enjoy. All right, Carl, thanks for being on the podcast and talking ghost and haunted house films with me.
Yeah, man, thank you for having me on.
Oh, yeah, this was a great idea of yours. Like, this is actually your idea to do the kind of ghost haunted house talk. And I think that makes for a good top 10 list is what we're doing on this episode. So it's a good one. Some of my films are kind of like they're still in that area of ghost haunted house, but they may be outside the lines a bit. But I think it'd be fun.
Right. Yeah. Well, we were talking about doing like a top 10 or something. And I was like thinking, you know, I know which one I've listened to all the ones you've done so far. And I was like, what's another, you know, type of horror movie that I like a lot that you haven't done yet? And I was like, oh yeah, like ghosts and haunted houses and paranormal type of movies are like probably like my favorite next to, you know, I love like occult and satanic movies and folk horror, werewolf movies, vampire movies and all that kind of stuff. You know, paranormal, like haunted house ones are pretty high up on my list. You know, they're ones I will go back to a lot, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely, it ranked pretty high on my list as well. It's hard to say exactly like what genre really like draws me in when it comes to film and stuff like that. Cause there's so many different like horror movies that I like from all kinds of different genres. I like sci-fi horror, cult horror. It's just, I couldn't name like a, you know, the perfect one for me that, you know, sums everything up. Because, I mean, if you look at my favorite film as of right now in the past, however many years it's been out with Mandy, it doesn't fit any genres really. So, you know, it's a hard one. But the haunted house stuff, the ghost stuff, it ranks up there high because I'm pretty sure I've lived in a few haunted houses in my time. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I lived in a really haunted apartment for a couple of years back in the day, like my early 20s down in downtown Denver. And after like having that experience of really, you know, experiencing physical paranormal activity type of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, kind of changes your viewpoint. I mean, I always liked that stuff. I always was like really fascinated with the paranormal and ghost stuff. And that, you know, like when Ghost Hunters first came out and those types of shows, I was like all about it, you know, like. And to this day, I mean, I spend a lot of time watching, like, you know, nowadays there's like a ton of people doing like ghost videos on YouTube and stuff, you know, like I love all that kind of real ghost paranormal stuff. And I love the movies, you know, that kind of spin off from that. And I think it's funny because I think that they're one of the few, I think because I've actually experienced real paranormal like events in my life and I know that feeling, you know, some of the feelings you get in those situations, I think that these kinds of movies are actually the ones that kind of scare me. You know, I would say that the movies that actually can like get under my skin a little bit, you know, are like, because like, you know, like occult movies or, you know, like vampire movie or something, they don't scare me. I just love them. You know, I think I love those kinds of movies, but they're not really, they don't like make me like scared or tense or something. But, you know, paranormal movies definitely can get to me sometimes because, I don't know if they're really well done and they can be really tense or it can just give you that kind of like feeling that you get when you're in a haunted place and you feel that feeling like something's watching you. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. It gets under the skin for sure.
So I think that's one reason I like them.
Well, yeah, that's a big reason I like it as well. Like, you know, that creepy feeling and stuff, having to experience some weird shit like that, it kind of, you know, definitely adds more to those films when you've been through some creepy shit.
Well, you live out, you're in South Carolina, right?
Yeah.
In North Carolina. Yeah.
South Carolina.
Yeah, that whole area, like, south of North Carolina is, like, super haunted and creepy in a lot of places, so.
Oh yeah, dude. It's creepy nonstop around here, pretty much. Like, there's a lot of fucked up history, especially in our downtown areas and where I'm from. So, in South Carolina, a lot of fucked
Right.
up shit went on. So, even like I said,
I
North Carolina as well.
yeah, dude. Like, I've there's a couple like real paranormal story podcasts I listen to, and can't and it's like I would say that 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10 of all the stories are like in North Carolina or South Carolina. It's all those like creepy stuff.
Yeah, dude, the South is pretty fucking haunted. You take all the way from North Carolina, shit, really Virginia down to New Orleans and stuff, you know, Georgia and all that in between. Like, a lot of haunted history there.
Yeah, definitely. And you can feel it when you're there too. Or
There's a
even.
film, one of my films on here that I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to throw in like a weird story too that I've experienced in one of the homes I've lived in when I was a kid. That's it. That still continues to haunt me till this day, dream wise. So,
Oh, really? Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, the it's yeah, the sometimes those places are real haunted. I would say up to Maryland is even pretty haunted because I've been to Baltimore and that place is has some real creepy place.
Yeah,
Plus it's got
Baltimore
like,
has some creepy energy from, yeah, definitely.
yeah, not a fan of that, the energy there, so.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of any like energy where it's like too many people in one spot. That's like when I went to New Orleans and where we stayed at in New Orleans for vacation stuff. I wasn't a fan of because it was like party city, you know, like there's people everywhere and like drunk and shit, and it's not my thing.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, like if you go to like the French Quarter, yeah, you definitely don't want to go like during like Mardi Gras or any of those types of times. Like it's, you know, you want to go, and you don't really want to go on to like the Bourbon Street either, because that's like real popping all the time. But if you get off the like main drag in New Orleans, it'll be like nobody there, and it's like just like real creepy feeling.
Yeah, we were in the French Quarter, and it wasn't during like Mardi Gras or nothing like that because we thought we'd avoid all the crowds. But when we got there was like a football game going on and some kind of like other
Oh.
festival going on. It was like I was like, oh my God, I wanted to kind of shoot myself there for a minute. I was like, oh, I got to get me out of here.
Last time I was in New Orleans was probably, what was it, 2017. It wasn't too busy at the time I went, but it was like April or something. So, yeah, I was only there for a day or so. But I've spent time there before when I was a teenager, and it's definitely a pretty creepy place. I love the cemeteries there.
Yeah, we got to go on a tour of a few cemeteries, but the tour was horrible, man. They drove us around in a bus. We didn't even get to get out and go into the damn cemeteries. There's like
Oh,
we had to
that's
sit
no
outside
good.
the gates and take pictures. I'm like, this is so stupid. And they told these ghost stories or whatever. And I was like, man, this is dumb as fuck. It was a big tourist trap. But I'm sure there's
Yeah.
other ways, you know, you can actually explore the right way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I just went in. Well, back when I was a teenager and my dad and I went, like, we could go to the famous one that they filmed, like, Easy Rider in and stuff like that. You could nowadays you can't even walk through it on your own. They gotta like set you have to go through with like some tour group, which sucks. But like when I went, you could just like walk around, go to Mary Laveau's like tomb and all those kinds of stuff, you know. And but yeah, I mean, you can go to some of the other cemeteries like in the Garden District and stuff like that, and just wander around, I think. So that's like the way to go with that, because those cemeteries are amazing. They're like little like cities of the dead, basically, you know.
We played New Orleans before too. I can't remember exactly where we were at. I think it was somewhere like downtown New Orleans. I don't know what row, whatever, but it was like a totally different feel when we, you know, my band played down there and stuff. It was the roads were fucking like crazy fucked up from the last hurricane that came through there and stuff. It was a totally different feel from staying at the French Quarter when I was on vacation. Crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely like totally different city. Like, you know, you have like the French Quarter and those kind of areas, and you go to the other parts and it's like totally different city. Yeah.
Most definitely.
It's a yeah. I just love all those kind of haunted places out here in the West. We got a lot of cool like haunted ghost towns and stuff like that as well, which I love. So.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm a big fan of the Denver area. I've been there a few times. I've played there, and I've also been on vacation there. And then Colorado Springs is where we played at. And then for like vacation, we were close to like, I think we're in Boulder. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we stayed in
Okay.
Boulder. And we, you know, did some drive around like to, then we drove all the way to the border of Wyoming, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that pretty close to Boulder?
Well, it's a good a couple hours drive.
Yeah.
Did you go up to Stanley?
We tried to, but when we went up there, they were having fucking avalanches. They were trying to clear roads off with all these big giant bulldozers and stuff.
Oh shit. So it was like winter time, yeah.
Yeah, and so we had to turn around, which sucked because that was like the big, you know, thing to do when we went there, but.
Yeah, I've never gotten to stay at the Stanley because it's kind of expensive, but I've been there a couple times. I saw Chelsea Wolfe play up there, which is pretty
Oh, that's
cool.
badass. Yeah, that sounds like a dream come true right there, seeing Chelsea Wolfe play up at the Stanley.
Yeah, she did her like when her acoustic album came out years ago. She did like an acoustic tour, and that was she played up at the haunted ballroom up there and the Stanley. Doing like an acoustic set with just basically her and the producer guy who does like bass and keyboards and stuff, you know. And it was fucking really cool. Yeah. And we went up a little bit early and we wandered around like the parts you can go where you're not, because you can go up and even if you're not staying there, you can walk around and they have like little like displays of like a kind of like a little museum area where you can see like pictures of how it used to look and, you know, stuff about like when they came and filmed the miniseries there, you know, and stuff like that. And so it's pretty cool. And it was cool going in that haunted ballroom and everything and, you know, and just like, it was definitely an experience, you know, you go on driving up there and then driving back down like from, you know, after that, like it's definitely a perfect thing to see up there 'cause their music's like very eerie and anyways, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, it
For like
fits
capture the
perfectly.
vibe. Yeah. Ooh, that was really cool.
That's badass, man. Yeah, very. You're lucky to see that. I'm jealous.
Yeah, definitely. I was like, that was one of those things where I couldn't miss that, you know.
Yeah, most of.
My friends like bought me the car ticket the ticket for the show if I drove all of us up, so you know.
Yeah, that's a good deal. I would take that deal.
Yeah, definitely. Oh,
All
yeah.
right, so we're gonna get to our top 10 list, and we're gonna start down from the very bottom of the top 10 list at number 10. Since you came up with this idea, which is fucking awesome, would you start us off with your number 10?
Sure thing. So my number 10 is going to be so The Others, which came out in 2001 with Nicole Kidman, directed by Alejandro Amenábar, I think is how you say his name. And this movie, basically, the plot, it's, the synopsis, it's on IMDb, is a woman who lives in a darkened old family house with her two photosensitive children becomes convinced that the home is haunted. You know, it kind of sums it up well. But I remember seeing this movie in the movie theaters, and it was very effective of like creeping me out. And I didn't really see like, you know, there's a twist at the end. You know, for I'm not gonna spoil it necessarily, but I didn't really see that coming. You know, and I think a lot of people would compare it to, or because it came out just a couple years after. What's that movie, Sixth Sense, comparing them. But I thought that The Others was like, I like The Others better personally. And for me, I think it's a perfect like example of this kind of like quintessential like English gothic type of haunted house and like atmosphere, you know, like it's like this old creepy mansion out in the middle of nowhere, covered in fog all the time, you know, it's completely dark. You know, because the kids can't get in the sunlight, and so it's just this like creepy, like Nightmarish Mansion thing. And I just always, when I was a kid, I had this weird like obsession with these types of like environments. So I really liked them and thought of, and so I thought this movie was great, and the atmosphere is great, and it definitely is like genuinely a kind of like a creepy movie, you know, even that yeah. Seeing it multiple times, the scenes that are tense are still tense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Only reason it's lower on my list is just because like the other movies on my list are movies that I'd like watch more, you know what I mean? I go back to you a lot more.
Right. Yeah, I remember seeing this one when it first came out, man. And back then, like the twist that this film has towards the end wasn't really done too often, you know? So it was like a nice twist. It's like how Sixth Sense was. Like you really didn't see that too much before Sixth Sense, and a lot of films started copying that. So this was definitely a cool one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the nice thing about the twist in it is that it's not just like a pointless twist. Like, when the whole plot actually makes sense, you know, when you realize what it is, and then you can kind of like go back and rewatch it, and you can kind of see the markers of that. But then, you know, the twist itself like works with like the plot and everything. It's not like just like, I don't know. Sometimes some movies have a twist at the end and it's like kind of dumb, you know. But this one's great.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, it's a great twist, and it, you know, it means a lot. It has weight to it. It's not just a twist for, you know, throwing it in there for shits, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot about it that I like that relates to other things that I like of this kind of maybe different dimension type of elements, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely has some strange aspects to it.
Yeah, I love that. So cool. That was my number 10.
All right. My number 10 is the 2001 film Session 9, which was directed by Brad Anderson, who also did another one of my favorites, The Machinist. I don't know if you've ever seen that one before with Christian yep. Bale. Yeah.
Christian Bale, yep. I love that movie. The Machinist is funny because he, you know, he always like all skinny.
Mm-hmm. He's the master of losing weight. What's that?
He said he just drank non-fat lattes and eat saltines. That's how he lost the weight for that movie.
Crazy. Yeah. Insane diet.
Crazy.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Brad Anderson is a great director. Session 9 is a super creepy synopsis from a internet movie database here. It says... tensions rise within an asbestos cleaning crew as they work in an abandoned mental hospital with a horrific past that seems to be coming back. So that's a, you know, small general like thing that's going on without giving any spoilers and stuff. But this movie like really hit me hard when I first saw it because I am a bit like claustrophobic. And, you know, those, you know, when you're a little bit younger, the fear of the dark or whatever, being lost, that's what this movie's about. You know, this guy's inside this, well, this team's inside this mental hospital and stuff, and they're trying to clean it out, get all the old asbestos out of there, and, you know, straighten up a bit. And this one fella, he's drawn to like this like hidden treasure inside this place, supposedly. And he tries to search for it and everything, and he gets lost inside there. And, you know, every day he goes back to it, he gets like lost deeper and deeper inside this place. And, you know, there's some supernatural elements in there, but they're not like right there in your face. You know, it's kind of like in the background, but you can always feel like there's some kind of dark presence in this film. And just really film really well and really gives you that sense of dread the whole time you watch it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing I love about this movie is the setting, because it's filmed in the actual old mental institution place. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's one in Connecticut, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's filmed on an actual, you know, ruin, you know, abandoned place, which, I mean, I've seen like a ton of, you know, ghost adventures and a bunch of like stuff, you know, go to this place and do actual paranormal investigations and stuff there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like a pretty creepy environment. And I think that's one thing I love about the movie is that it's like really like in this real, you know, real creepy environment that gives it a some authenticity as well, you know.
I think it's called the Danvers Mental Hospital is the name of the place it was where it took place at.
That's so it. That's,
yeah. Yeah, extra creepy.
I can't remember what.
When it's actually in a fucking, you know, abandoned mental hospital, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Danvers is, let me see. It's Massachusetts. That place, I mean, if you look at the history of the Danvers Mental Institution place, it's fucking creepy as fuck, dude. Like, and really fucked up. You know, and so, you know, yeah, it gives it this weight because, I mean, I've seen some pretty compelling, you know, like video footage and stuff filmed this place that, you know, I think it's definitely a haunted location. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the atmosphere inside this place is super heavy, you know, just being there with all that like energy that was there before you. You're just kind of lingering around and there's got to be super heavy. And I think it shows in this film, like it feels real, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like, what's better, you know, what can be better to film like a kind of supernatural kind of paranormal movie like this and psychological movie like it is in a place that's like genuinely like creepy and, you know what I mean, like a real location like that. I think that's perfect.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I wish they would I look for more of these type of films, but when they're not never done like the way Session 9 was done, you know, they don't give you that like real feeling, you know, when you see these other like so-called mental institutions or abandoned hospitals or abandoned jails and stuff like that. I don't know. They just don't have the same feeling as Session 9 did. Session 9 was really heavy.
Yeah, definitely. Session 9 had a real heavy atmosphere. It's a good one. I haven't watched it in a long time. I need to revisit it.
Yeah, it was streaming on Amazon for a while. I'm not sure where it's streaming at right now, but I'm sure you can find it pretty easy.
Yeah, I'll have to add it to my Halloween watching this year.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one for sure. Definitely. All right, so that was my number 10, so we're down to number 9.
Yep, so my number 9 is going to be The Conjuring. So I know that's a kind of, yeah. And so, you know, it's a pretty bigger movie in a lot of ways. I personally think that, let's see, well, the synopsis is kind of like pretty short. Paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren work to help a family terrorized by dark presence in their farmhouse. It captures it. It's based on a true story. The true story in of itself is pretty creepy. I've watched a bunch of stuff about it. People can do like paranormal investigations and stuff in the house nowadays, and there's still like pretty creepy house. You know, like they didn't fix nothing there. But you know, the movie is obviously a dramatization of this, so it's not, you know, it's not necessarily real, but some of the events are based off the reality. And you know, it's definitely a rosy-tinted version of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who in real life I'm not that real big fan of. But I think the movie's just a great one. I think it's the best one that James Wan has made, in my opinion. And I think what makes it work for me is that, you know, I felt like with like Insidious, for example, that you go back to it, it didn't hold up for rewatches for me personally. Like I felt like it's just like a bunch of jump scares and stuff. And it didn't, you know, there's some cool ideas in it, but it didn't really hold up when I went back and rewatched it more times. But The Conjuring holds up. Like the scenes that are genuinely like nerve wracking or tense, like are tense no matter how many times I've seen it. I've seen this movie a lot of times, and like certain scenes, like the whole part with like the wardrobe, for example, like still creep me out, you know, it's still creepy. And I think that's why I like this movie the most out of his movies. And I think it's just like a really good quintessential like haunted house like type of movie, I think, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. James Wan's gonna come up on my list too, but different film. So well, yeah,
okay.
This is a great one. I love The Conjuring. It's very effective, you know.
Yeah, and I think that I like it better than Conjuring 2. I haven't seen the third one yet, but it's definitely the best out of those ones, I think, just judging from what I've heard about the third one. Yeah, I never saw it.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, I heard it was bad, or not good. But he didn't film that one anyway, so. And then I never saw the Amityville movies. I've heard mixed things about them.
Oh, the Amityville movies?
No, the Annabelle movies.
Oh, the Annabelle movies. Okay, yeah. Which one did I watch that I actually liked? I think maybe it was the second or third one that was decent, but they never really haven't done much for me, you know?
Yeah, I've heard some people liked the second one, the Annabelle Creation or whatever, but yeah, I think The Conjuring is a great one. I love the atmosphere of it. I think it's really well made. I like, and then, yeah, like I said, it's always like, it creeps me out, you know, and it gets me, you know, so I like it.
Yeah, that's a good choice. And that's a good one to watch. If you're doing like the 30 Days of Horror, that's a good one to throw in there, you know, for October. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. It's one that I go back to a lot. I just enjoy watching it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's a really good possession movie as well. Like, they nailed that shit pretty good, you know? It's gets pretty creepy there for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty creepy throughout, you know? Like, I love the whole, like I said, I love the whole scene with, like, the wardrobe, you know? Mm. So creepy. And then, like, yeah, like, the possession elements of it are creepy. And just, like, yeah, I just think it's a great movie.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. All right, so my number 9, this is an interesting one and also a fun one to watch during October because I think this is when it originally aired, was Halloween or sometime in October. But it's the 1992 made-for-TV movie from the BBC called Ghostwatch.
I haven't seen that one, actually, because I haven't been able to find it anywhere.
It was streaming up on Shudder. I don't know if it's still up there, but right now, as I say, you can search on Amazon for it. It could be up on Tubi as well, because Tubi seems to have every damn thing.
Yeah, I'm not booked for this, because I really want to see this. I've heard it's really good.
All right, without giving you any spoilers, then I'll just give you a brief synopsis in my own words here, because the one I'm reading from Internet Movie Database is kind of spoilish. So, but yeah, this is like... that came out in like 92, and it's one of the like first found footage ghost house horror type films. When it first came out, like it was a TV movie, and it was airing on a whatever night on the BBC channel. People thought this was real because the way it's filmed, like it's found footage and stuff, it looks fucking real. It looks like a real TV newscast. Like they're investigating this like so-called haunted house and shit. You know, like it looks real. It fooled a whole bunch of people, and people thought this was real. So kind of adds to the scares of it and stuff. But these investigators, you know, they have some paranormal investigators, like a news reporter and all. They go to this supposedly haunted house and stuff, and, you know, real shit starts happening. And like people are freaking out, right, like real life, thinking this shit was real, you know, and special effects and everything is really good for what it is, like super effective. And yeah, this one kind of lives in the like horror movie legends and stuff, you know, because people believe in how real this was, and, you know, people are having fits about it. But
I know that I heard that like the guy who is like hosting it was an actual like TV host on British TV. Yeah, like they really went all in on like trying to make it seem like it was like a live action, like live like television special or something, you know, like that's what I heard about it. Yeah,
that's what gave it that real feeling, you know, fooled so many people. I could imagine like watching that. So you're watching your local news or your one of your local channels and stuff. And, oh, man, we got this big paranormal thing going on and everybody believes that's what this is. And turns out to be a fucking fake in the end. But really good film. Like I gave this one like a 9 out of 10 when I saw it. And it's super fun to watch during the 30 days of Halloween. You know, I watch horror movies all year long, but I just think it's kind of fun to do like a 30 days thing or as many as you can fit in during the month of October.
Yes, I do.
This one should definitely be up there. And the director for this one was Leslie Manning. And some of the films I've seen on here, like I've never seen half of them. Only one I've seen is Ghost Watch. But Ghost Watch is super cool. And great haunted house film, and I think everybody should check that one out. Hopefully you can find it.
I'll have to try to track it down. I was trying to find it. I know it's not on YouTube because I was trying to find it a few months ago because I had to listen to a podcast we were talking about like a British podcast called Evolution of Horror.
Yeah, I think you told me about that one.
Yeah, me and Mike are big fans of that podcast, and they were talking about that one, and it sounded like super great, like you know, very scary. And I think to this day, the BBC hasn't even like rebroadcast it on TV.
I don't think so. Yeah, and Shudder got the rights to it for a couple of years. Like I said, it might still be up there, but I'm not 100% sure on that. That's where I first watched it, was on Shudder, but they may have lost the rights to it. You know.
I just checked this on there, so I'll have to like try to dig around, try to find it somewhere.
Yeah, it'd be worth the hunt for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's on my list.
Cool. All right, so now we're down to your number 8. Oh, I'm sorry, is it your number 8? Yeah.
Yeah, number 8. So my number 8 is going to be 1992's Poltergeist, directed by Toby Hooper, with kind of Steven Spielberg's help. it almost seems like it was co-directed by them in a lot of ways, you know, like Toby, that's what it sounds like from everything I've heard, you know, that like Steven had a big hand in it, and Toby Hooper was like the main director, but Steven Spielberg had a big hand in the movie as well.
Right. Yeah. The great debate, who directed it, Toby Hooper or Spielberg. it's a big debate for sure. You know, I kind of tend to be a Toby Hooper guy with this one, but.
Yeah, me too. I think that it's definitely, you can see Steven Spielberg's hand on it, but I also trust like Mick Garris, like really says that Toby Hooper was like the main, you know, the main guy, but Steven was like very enthusiastic and, you know, would put his hand in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think everyone knows, you know, this movie's about like a family, like, you know, it says on IMDb, a family's home is haunted by a host of demonic ghosts. And I mean, this is like a classic one, obviously. And, you know, the only reason it's not higher on my list is just because the ones that are higher, I kind of like more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great movie. I've seen it so many times since I was a kid. You know, this is probably one of my first horror movies I probably saw when I was a kid, even, you know, or it was one of those ones that I saw a lot. And so it gives me that kind of like nostalgia feeling whenever I watch it, you know, you go back to being a kid kind of. And
right.
I think that it's pretty creepy in a lot of ways. It's not like as creepy as some other movies necessarily, but I think that is well done. I like the ending with like the skeletons coming out everywhere. I like the whole idea that they're built on an Indian burial ground or whatever, or a cemetery or whatever.
Yeah.
I actually think it's just a cemetery, but, you know, like, cause here in Colorado, for example, at Cheeseman Park, which is downtown, what used to be a cemetery, and they turned into a park and moved the bodies to this other cemetery, which is a pretty creepy cemetery, actually, I think, called Riverside. And, but when they're doing it, they're paying the guy per like box or something, or I can't remember how it went exactly, but, from what I heard, there's still bodies and stuff like still in Cheeseman Park. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because sometimes when you walk around there, like it feels like walking across a cemetery, like that weird, like way that the ground feels at a cemetery, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
and so this park feels like that in a lot of ways. So I don't know. You can see that kind of thing happen in a lot of places. That so you could believe it. Yeah, I mean, maybe they did. You know, they just built all these houses over the cemetery, basically, and just left the bodies there. You know.
Right. Yeah, this one's gonna rank up on my list as well, but it's higher up. So.
Cool. Yeah, we can talk about more when you get to it.
Yeah, great choice, man. Yeah, I knew we were gonna have some similar ones on here because there's a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, I mean, this is Poltergeist is like a go-to, you know, ghost movie. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, this is like pinnacle of ghost movies in my mind, you know.
Definitely, it's one that yeah, it's a great one.
All right, so my number 8 is a remake from 1999, House on Haunted Hill.
Oh, this one's actually on my list as well, so a bit older.
Good
higher.
Choice. Yeah, the quick synopsis of this one is an amusement park mogul offers a group of diverse people $1 million to spend the night in a haunted house with horrifying past. It's not really a house they're on. It's house they're staying in. They're staying in also another abandoned mental hospital and stuff. And I like the original. The original is cool for what it is, especially for when it came out. Like, the effects and all were cool. But I just think this one here topped it for me, the remake that came out in 99. And a lot of that, you know, I mean, the cast is great. You got Jeffrey Rush and you got Famke Jensen. I mean, and Taye Diggs. I don't know if he still does anything, but, you know, they all have really good chemistry together and stuff. And this one was really creepy. It was when it came out in 99, there was a whole bunch of these type of films. Like you got Ghost Ship, you had House on Haunted Hill. You had some other ones. There's another one I'm going to mention in my list here.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll mention it then. I'm going to guess it's one that you're going to mention, so I won't.
Probably will be.
I love this movie. I mean, I'll talk about more when I get to my list, but I think that this remake is amazing, you know, like, and I think that it's definitely one I go back to a lot because I think it's fun. I think it's creepy. I love the sets set that they made for the underground, you know, like for the old mental institution and everything. I have an old Fangoria from when this came out has like the whole big article about this movie, which is cool.
That's badass. Yeah, the sets were really, really well done, especially when shit starts going downhill after the whole like hospital, like all the doors shut and they're locked in and stuff, and they like venture further into it, you know. And this also one of the scenes in here with one of the ghosts and stuff is one of those like shaky face scenes that was kind of started in Jacob's Ladder, but I think this one takes it almost at the same level, maybe a bit further with the like shaky, like jittery way of walking and stuff they do with the effects. Like, it just makes it that much creepier because that like effect wasn't overplayed yet, you know. It was like, this is kind of like between Jacob's Ladder and this, like, not a lot of movies are doing that. And I just think it was super effective. And this was a fucking scary one when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah. My dad and I saw this when it came out, and it's a great one. Jacob's Ladder is another great movie, but I don't think that one really counted as a ghost movie necessarily.
No.
I wasn't really sure what that one's kind of like, borderline unclassifiable, but the that effect was like started, and of course it also shows up in like Silent Hill, which was coming out around the same time as this movie came out. So
yep, that was another one of those films that were kind of thrown into that like 1990, 2000, 2001, those type of films. It was a pretty good couple of years for horror, you know. I think that was right around the same time like the Scream movies started coming out and everything like that, which, you know, I appreciate Scream. I'm not the biggest fan. I do like the first film a lot, but, you know, the other films, like I Know What You Did Last Summer, I just never really cared for those. I look back on them now with, like, I guess nostalgia, though. I'm like, oh, I guess they're kind of cool. I might rewatch it, but they never really did anything. These are the kind of films I like, were like the haunted house stuff back then and the other type of, like, creature features and everything. I just wasn't a fan of, like, the teen slashers that involve just regular like humans, you know. There's no supernatural element to them. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, me too. I know, like those other ones. I think that, you know, the period of like Scream coming out to like early 2000s was probably you know, overall was not a great period for horror, I think, but you had like some great movies come out like this one and you know, and then I think in the early 2000s, you got this sudden, like, it was like the gates, like, Unleashed when you got like 20 Days Later and the Dawn of the Dead remake, and there's all these great fucking movies coming out, you know?
Yeah.
And you could even include like, so I think, you know, The Other is coming out 2001. I think that sets stuff off as well. So I think this movie was kind of like a precursor to that, like, that revival, you know?
Yeah, it was like a supernatural revival, you know, and this was one of the films heading it up. So that's for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, and I'll say a few more things about it when I get to my list. So.
Okay, cool. So we're down to number seven.
Yep, number seven. And my number seven is The Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I forgot about that one, but that's a good one.
Yeah, this is definitely, I think, a real underrated movie. Let me see. Forgot to pull it up. Haunting in Connecticut came out in 2009. The plot of it is these people move into, because I can't find the thing. It's basically these people move in. This lady has like they have like a son who has cancer, and they're like, she's like driving like super far for treatments, so they decide to like rent a house closer to where where the treatments are, you know?
Yeah.
And then it turns out this place was like a old, like, what do you call it? A funeral home, and seems to be haunted with some type of evil presence. And I won't give anything else away, but I really love this movie. I think it's really underrated. I think it's, for me, I find it a little bit more creepy than The Conjuring in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it kind of rates a little bit higher most, because I find it very like tense and very creepy and atmospheric, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very kind of a similar type of movie as Conjuring in some ways, but it ends up with a very completely different type of result. I like I think it's really effective and really inventive with the way that it turns out. And I remember seeing it when it came out, and I bought it, and I've watched it like a million times. Like, I love the atmosphere of this movie, and I love the feeling and how creepy it is, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely creepy.
It's definitely, I think, underrated. It's one of those ones that's like one of my personal one of my personal favorites. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, it gets overlooked a lot, you know?
Yeah, this was a good one to go back and rewatch. I haven't seen this one in a while. I've only watched it a couple times. I remember it was good, so.
Yeah, I mean, definitely recommend. It's a good one for Halloween as well, like season, and it's very, very creepy. And, it came out before, you know, a little while before, like, you got Conjuring and all these other types of movies coming out. So it was a little bit ahead of the pack in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's followed by some absolutely like god awful remakes that have nothing to do with, or not remakes, or sequels, which I do mm-hmm. not recommend like bothering with at all. just ignore those. Just watch the first one. It's pretty good. This actual story behind it is pretty interesting. I think on the DVD I have has a documentary about the true story,
mm-hmm.
which I think is on The Conjuring as well. Again, the true story also involves Ed and Lorraine Warren. And what's interesting is that some of the things that happened in the real life of the whole situation are kind of similar to what happened with the Conjuring people as well. So it's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. But I like the way that it breaks from reality though, and takes a kind of a left turn in this movie, because right. I think it's really deals with like necromancy and stuff, and I love that.
Yeah, that is cool, and definitely not a typical thing you see in some of these ghost stories and stuff, so adds a different dimension to it.
Exactly. That's why I love it, because it's like it adds like this completely like a unique spin on the whole thing, which I think could be like utilized a lot more. Like, you know, there's a whole history of necromancy and stuff like that, and magic. And I think that it would be really interesting for people to delve into that more, but unfortunately it's not, you know, not something that gets touched on very often.
That's true. All right. So my number seven is a childhood classic of mine. It's the 1996 Peter Jackson classic, The Frighteners.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people know Peter Jackson did this one. I mean, it's a classic to me, but I don't know if it seems a little bit underrated, I guess. You don't hear that much about it in the mainstream, of course, but people that know that this film is fucking killer, you know?
Yep. And, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite Michael J. Fox movies, but he's got a ton, man. When he was in his prime, like, he was the man, I think. Great actor and stuff. And also, this has another favorite of mine, Jeffrey Combs, playing, you know, a Jeffrey Combs part, which is always absolutely fucking batshit crazy, you know?
Yeah, I love him in this movie.
Yeah, dude, he's the, anything Jeffrey Combs is in, I'm going to check it out just to see, you know, because, I mean, he eats up the scenes and stuff, whatever he's in. Like, he's a fantastic actor, I think, and I don't think he's utilized enough. He should be in more things, but, you know, most of the time he's in Lovecraft stuff, and, you know, this is a kind of a venture away from that a little bit, even though it is kind of Lovecraftian, sort of, kind of, but, you know, what's that?
He was in a very small part in the House on Haunted Hill remake too. He played that, yep, that the doctor. Yeah.
I wish he was in there more. I was sad when I was like, that's a small part, man. I want to see more Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, definitely.
another interesting actor who I enjoy when he's in the roles that are kind of made for him is old Gary Busey's son, Jake Busey. Jake, yeah. Busey's not near as crazy as his father is, but he's still got that Busey craziness about him, which, you know, definitely adds some flavor to the film.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, fucking D. Wallace. I mean, it's a stacked lineup, like, awesome actors and stuff. And a brief synopsis of this movie from Internet Movie Database is after a tragic car accident that kills his wife, a man discovers he can communicate with the dead to con people. However, when a demonic spirit appears, he may be the only one who can stop it from killing the living and the dead. So that's a pretty decent synopsis and a generalization of what's going on here without giving away too much. But Michael J. Fox is kind of a ghost con man. You know, he has a bunch of ghosts that work for him, and they go around fucking taking people's money, you know, scamming them.
Yeah.
So something real happens, you know, and shit starts getting pretty dark and stuff. And, yeah, if you've never seen a ghost get killed, they can get killed in this by a Reaper type ghost, you know, super powerful other ghost that's going around, you know, often other ghosts. So pretty interesting storyline. And I think special effects wise, it was done really well for 1996. Some of the CGI didn't age that well, but if you can look past that, it's still a super fun movie to watch. Like, it's like nonstop action and craziness.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, some of the CG in it is definitely 90s CG, but, you know, that's the thing with that era. Like, if the movie holds up, like, you can kind of look past that. And, yeah, I think Frighteners is great. I haven't seen it in a while, but I love that movie.
Yeah, that's usually one I watch at least once a year. It's just, yeah, and it totally brings you back to that time period in 1996, man. It makes me feel like a kid again, you know?
Right, yeah, you're like flashing back to getting on VHS or whatever.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I remember the box for this movie, like so clear in my mind.
Yeah, it had the, whatchamacallit, the 3D effect type thing. What am I thinking?
Yeah.
It's kind of having a brain fart here. But, yeah, it had, like, that 3D effect. When you, like, turn it certain ways, it kind of, like, you know, stuck out at you.
Yeah, exactly. Some movies had that, you just like move it back and forth. I remember that like super well.
Yeah, that was a big seller for me, man. Back in the day, was looking at the VHS like artwork and stuff. You know, if it caught my eye and it looked good on the back, I was grabbing it.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of movies that I remember the boxes for. And there's some movies that I didn't actually end up seeing when I was a kid that I remember the boxes for that I then turned and saw when I was late, older, you know?
Yeah, they totally made an impact on us growing up, the artwork and stuff. It's a shame now without video stores and stuff, we, you know, the newer generation of fans and all can't like experience what we experienced back then, like being in a video store and seeing all the crazy artwork and stuff that really caught your eye, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like something about like holding it and like the tactile, like you're holding the box in your hand and you kind of read the back mm-hmm. and you look at the cover and maybe it's like, oh, like your parents say you can only rent like two movies or something, you know, or you have a limit of, you know, if you're renting with your own money, you only have like so much money, you know what I mean? So you have to like decide and you're like holding each one in your hand, like which one to get, you know?
mm-hmm. Yeah, something magical about that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so I guess we're down to number six.
Yep, so my number six is, let me make sure the year this came out. It was 1980, The Fog from John Carpenter.
Oh, cool. Good choice.
Yep, with starring Adrian Barbeau and Jamie Lee Curtis, Tom Atkins, Janet Leigh, and Hal Holbrook. The synopsis is basically an earthly fog rolls into a small coastal town exactly 100 years after a ship mysteriously vanishes. Let's see what else. Yep, a ship mysteriously sank in its waters. And I love this movie. Like, from like literally like I watched it like last October for my 31 days of Halloween, and literally like seconds, like I just like turned it on and I was just sucked in until the end. Mm-hmm. It just, and I just felt like, man, this movie could have been even longer and I would have been happy, like, you know, because just the atmosphere and the feeling of it is just like perfect. The soundtrack, like I got done watching the movie and I just found the soundtrack and sat Spotify and listened to it, you know, because I love soundtrack. I love the piano like pieces in it that John Carpenter used, which I think were very influential on Akira Yamaoka for the Silent Hill soundtrack as well.
Mm-hmm.
Soundtrack. And just the whole feeling, the way that it starts, like with like these kind of like paranormal things happening, is like kind of like a little, like, it's almost like before an earthquake happens, you got this like little like mini tremor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this kind of supernatural stuff happening before the main event. And you have this like creepy fucking haunted fog and you know, ghost, pirate ghosts. And, I mean, it's just a fucking great movie, you know?
It is. I mean, soundtrack, like you said, is fucking killer. But I mean, every John Carpenter soundtrack is killer. I listen to that a bunch on Spotify. Just, you know, find John Carpenter stuff and throw like in the mix and just let it go, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. I listen to John Carpenter soundtracks a lot just by themselves. And I think this one and Prince of Darkness are two of my favorites.
Yeah, those are both really good.
But this one just has like a real atmosphere, and I don't know, it just has this feeling. It's very nostalgic for me as well, because it was one of my dad's favorite movies, so we used to watch it a lot, and I definitely would watch it almost every Halloween. And you know, it has a great feeling. It's maybe not necessarily a super Halloween movie in a way, because it's set like, you know, like fall, or not fall, in like spring or whatever. But, you know, it's definitely a good one to watch during Halloween. And it's a good one to watch at any time of year. But it just really captures this kind of creepy feeling of being like in this small town and on the coast and having this creepy stuff happening. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, fantastic movie and a great one to watch during Halloween time, that's for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, that was my number six.
That's your number six. So my number six is a film you touched on a little bit earlier today, but I don't think you liked it as much as I like it. But it's a 2010 James Wan's Insidious. This one hits me differently. Yeah. I ignored this one for a while, man, just because of the box art on it sucked. It looked like one of those like kind of generic, like, you know, whatever movies are just still at the video. They usually suck sometimes, you know. So the box art was crap. But a friend of mine saw it, and he was recommending it to me. He's like, you got to see this. One of the scariest movies I've ever seen. I'm like, all right, I'll check it out, you know. And the first time I watched this, it was I watched it like 2 in the morning, man. So I was already sleeping and stuff. And I had that, you know, already half asleep, half awake feeling. And then I watched this. I'm like, it blew me away. I'm like, holy shit, this is not what I expected at all, you know. So like dark, and the way they use the I know some of the jump scares are a little like, you know, typical, but there's certain scares in there or like things they do that really give you some chills, you know, especially when the demon like character is introduced, you know, the red demon looking guy. Like, he is fucking, yeah, he was terrifying at 2 a.m, especially when he's sitting there sharpening up his claws listening to Tiny Tim. I'm like, God, damn it. Yeah, that's like, I was like, fuck, dude, because when I first watched it, I was like half asleep, like I'm in that feeling, but I'm paying, you know, paying attention to it and stuff. I'm just in that zone feeling, you know, where I'm almost out into the dreamland thing going on. And yeah, that one kind of fucked with me a little bit. A quick synopsis of this one is a family looks to prevent evil spirits from trapping their comatose child in a realm called the Further. And so
that's one thing I really like about Insidious, though, is the Further and the whole idea of like kind of astral projection. Like, I don't hate this movie. I like it. I just don't like it as much as The Conjuring, personally, you know, for me. You know what I mean? But I do think it's a good movie. You know.
And yeah, it definitely is. And I mean, it pairs well with The Conjuring if you were to do like a double feature of these two. Don't even do like, I mean, Insidious 2 is really cool too, but if you want to do like two first films, you go with The Conjuring and then Insidious. I mean, that would make for a pretty cool double feature.
Yeah, and almost feels like in some way they're almost taking place in the same universe in a weird way, but they're also different. But yeah, I do really like the whole Further thing element of this one. And you know, my only complaint about it was that I really loved the Insidious the first time I watched it. Like, I was, was like blown away. But I think like when I watched it multiple times, I was like, maybe like not, and it wasn't, I liked it a bit less each time I watched it. You know what I mean? Right. But I should probably revisit it because it's been a long time since I've watched it the last time. But I mean, I do like it though. I do think it's a good movie.
I like the whole astral projection stuff too in this one, because as a kid, like really young, maybe 5 or 6 or so, I had this moment of half asleep, half awake, I guess. And it felt like I was floating and I could see my body below me and I was floating up to the ceiling. I don't know if that was a dream or not. It could have been a really, really realistic dream, but that kind of, you know, the astral projection stuff, I've looked into that before, like as I've gotten older. Like, there's certain things you can do to you know, try to astral project or whatever and stuff, you know. I've never achieved any of that again, but it was that one time when I was a kid, man, like floating up to the ceiling and seeing my body below me. That was a hell of a dream, if it was a dream, you know.
Well, it probably was, and I mean, I definitely believe in astral projection, and you know, I've had experiences with that as well, like with like training, trying to train yourself to do those types of things. And yeah, I think that's why, that's one thing I really like about Insidious, is them drawing on that whole thing, because you know, there's it's pretty common in old mythology, the idea of doing astral projection you know, like your soul getting trapped in there, and, you know, and then you die, or your body like gets like in a coma or something because you've lost your soul, you know, stuff like that. Like, so I think it draws upon some real primal type of stories and stuff as well, you know.
Oh yeah, and I also like the fact that since you're out there doing your astral projection stuff, you're left with like a shell of a body. So that means more insidious things can move in there and take over, which that's just fucking cool, man. You know?
Yeah, that's a good concept. And I definitely love the demon in that movie. So it's real creepy.
Yeah, it's the best. And he has like hooves and stuff too, which I always find extra creepy when any kind of demon has like hooves and shit, and they're like clapping along when they're walking and shit. And that just freaks me out, man. You know? Add Tiny Tim on top of that, like, holy shit. Tiny Tim was already creepy as shit, fucking awesome. So that just, the whole package is great.
I would, I love demons, so you know, I'm like, I love just anytime you got a cool demon in a movie. And you know, what's funny is the person who played the demon was actually was his name Joseph Bishar or whatever, the guy who does the soundtracks for James Wan. Yeah, he played the demon in this, and he played Bathsheba and The Conjuring, and he played like the demon, and that's in Annabelle.
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, that's cool. He's got the best of both worlds. He gets to do the soundtrack and play a fucking demon. That's cool. You know.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot of fun. Like getting to play like a cloven hoofed demon.
That's always been a goal of mine, is to play like a creature or a monster in a film. I've been in one film in my life, but I was playing as an extra, scientist type person that was fucking with another group of scientists. So there's like a herd of us. We're on like these pink outfits. I'm pretty sure I'm in a movie somewhere. If you saw it, it's called A Science Team. I think Trauma may have picked it up, but I look totally different than that one. This was like many, many years ago. I didn't have a beard or nothing like that, or long hair. So you might be able to spot me in there if you see that movie, if you can find that movie. I think it's streaming on YouTube. So Science Team is the name of it.
My number five. So my number five is one you did earlier, but I'm kind of doing a two for one in a way, because it's The House on Haunted Hill, but I want to like shout out the original in this and the remake. The remake is one I think I like, you know, just because the remake I think is one that is, you know, it's the one that really wins it for me. But I'd like to shout out the original one too, because it's one that basically, since I was a little kid, I've watched every year for Halloween, because it's like, that was like me and my dad's like, you know, thing that we did. And we'd watch always every Halloween season, you watch House on Haunted Hill, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I love the original with Vincent Price. You know, I've always felt like it was a little bit of a cop out, like in a way, because, you know, you're not really sure if it's actually, you know, I think it's haunted, you know, I think the place is haunted, but I can't account for some things, but they do kind of cop it out in the original a little bit at the end. But I think it's a great movie, and I love the sets in it with as well. And that one where there's like this creepy, like very like conventionalized, like Halloween, like haunted house, like sets with like cobwebs everywhere and everything. I think it's real effective. And, you know, when I was a kid, it's so funny when I think about like, when I was a little kid, I was kind of scared of like the some of the scenes in it, but it was like, as an adult, you're like, man, that's not scary at all. But so I do love the original, but I do think the remake is overall like, it's a better movie, you know. And I think that I thought Jeffrey Rush did a great job kind of revive, you know, doing his version of Vincent Price, you know.
Oh yeah.
And Famke Janssen as a wife, like, is amazing. Like, I love her.
Yeah, and she's great in everything.
Yeah, she's great in everything. And just like we were talking about earlier, I love the sets, like the way that they did the in their remake, and as well, like when you get down into that lower portion of it with like the old hospital, and they got like the things that are based off of the body works, you know, where it's like the bodies, like where you can see like all the veins and stuff on them.
Right.
I love that. And, it's just like super fucking creepy. Like I don't know about you, but I probably wouldn't be walking around in that basement. You know what I mean?
No, good. I wouldn't fuck that, dude. Yeah.
No. If I was in there that night, I would be just sitting upstairs waiting for the daytime. You know what I mean? Like, fuck.
Yeah, I'm not exploring any.
The place is creepy as fuck. Like, you know, like, just like abandoned mental institution with like creepy, like, that one, like, tank that they put him in that like spins and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, which is a great, great part of the movie as well, when he's in that tank, and that it goes into like the like hallucinations and stuff. So yeah, but I wanted to shout out the original one as well, just because it's one that I have a special connection to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's a great film. So
yeah, and you know, they have a real nice version of on Shudder. that's like really like restored, like, and looks really great, really good for that original movie that I watched last year. So
yeah, definitely I'd recommend that, and hopefully it's still up on Shudder. I think it is, but
it probably one of those ones that is always there because it's like in like public domain, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so they probably have, because it seems like they have like a kind of a bunch of like a public domain, like silent movies and stuff like that, that probably just are up there like all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my number five, is the House on Haunted Hill movies.
Okay. So my number five is also a remake of an older film. It's the 2001 film, 13 Ghosts. This one's killer. First time I saw it, I was a freshman in high school. And we went to see this during Halloween. It was like part of the Halloween thing we were doing and stuff. And this one definitely got me, especially some of the lighting effects and the sound design that was used for this. When they get down into the like the meat of this movie, when, you know, they get to meet the ghosts and all that stuff and all the different contraptions and stuff. There's these like bright, really bright like scenes of light and this sound. It was freaking me out, man. I'm not really good with strobe lights and stuff like that. They kind of fuck with me, so it kind of give me that same effect. So add that on top of like this crazy ass film with like some of the best like creature ghost effects I've ever seen when it comes to like costume and makeup and all that stuff. Fucking top notch. And this one, this definitely kind of traumatized me a little bit.
Yeah, this one's great. And that the House on Haunted Hill also came out in October when it came out. It was like the only horror movie that came out during October for Halloween that year. And then the same people who made that one, they made 13 Ghosts 2 years later, whatever, from 2001. And I think it's a different director, but it's the same kind of, I can't remember what it's called, Ghost House or whatever.
Dark Castle. I think it was Dark Castle.
Yeah, that's right. Dark Castle. Yeah. And they did the Ghost Ship movie as well, which I think is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the House of Wax remake with Paris Hilton later on.
Oh yeah, that's actually pretty good. It grew on me a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I think it's not bad. The 13 Ghosts is great. This one is definitely 1,000 times better than the original William Castle movie, which I was not a big fan of.
No.
I mean, I like it okay when I was a kid, but I thought it was kind of goofy. But it's okay. But yeah, this one is like real good. And another really good scene is the one where the guy gets cut in half by the glass.
Oh yeah.
Really, really good. Well done, like effects scene there.
My favorite scene in this whole film is the first 15 minutes, maybe less, is when they're coming down the they're all in a junkyard about to catch their first ghost, the Juggernaut, which is my favorite on all of them because he's a fucking, this is a nasty motherfucker. But they're coming down this aisle of cars, and they have this big ass semi truck fucking shooting blood out of both sides to try to entice the Juggernaut, you know, to follow them into their like ghost catching contraption and stuff. And I'm like, it's so fucking brutal, because when he does show up, you just see people being picked up in air and broken in half, cars thrown on people because he's a fucking giant brute who doesn't give a fuck. He's just all about, I think his body counts like in the hundreds, how many people he's killed and left in that junkyard when he was alive. And they're not counting how many he's killed since he's been dead, you know? It's like so brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. That I need to rewatch the movie because I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being great. And the like great effects. And I think it's a really enjoyable movie and definitely brings me back to being like whatever, like 15 or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I think I was right at 15 for this, 15 or 16. If I was a freshman, I was like 15. But
I probably I was probably actually, how old was I? I was like 13, because you're 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it brings me back to being a kid, being like an adolescent or whatever.
Yeah, and it's still super good, man. It holds up, like all the effects hold up, because there wasn't a lot of CGI used in this. Here and there, I guess, but it's mostly all practical stuff, man, and it looks fucking great still. Like, this is a fun one to revisit, you know. And I'm a big fan of Matthew Lillard too, so he's always cool in anything he plays, and I've been a fan of him since like SLC Punk when I first saw that, so you know.
He's good.
Yeah, it's great. Like highly recommend this one. It's streaming. I think you can find it on Amazon. It's not really streaming anywhere that I know of that you can watch, I guess, for the subscription. But you can find it on Amazon for pretty cheap, or probably Tubi as well. Like, Tubi has everything, like I've said before. But this is a good one, and also another great one for 30 Days of Horror during October. So.
Yeah, and you can probably pretty easily find this on like DVD at a used DVD store or something. You know?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah. I still have my original DVD of this, the old school DVDs with the big giant box and stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the I think a good, real good double feature would be to do House on Haunted Hill then 13 Ghosts back to back.
Oh hell yeah! Should make it a triple feature and throw a Ghost Ship in there, man. That'd be a solid night.
Definitely, that'd be a good trio of movies to watch.
All right, so now we're down to number four.
So my number four is the classic. One second, let me find the on 19. Okay, so my here it is. My number four is 1963, The Haunting.
Oh, nice.
So, directed by Robert Wise, adapted from the Shirley Jackson novel, The Haunting of Hill House. Stars Julie Harris, Claire Bloom, Richard Johnson, and Russ Tambor. And you can break down the... I'll try to see if it's not just make it a little easier. So, a scientist doing research on a paranormal and invites two women to this haunted house. It's a hill house that stood for 90 years and appears haunted. Its inhabitants have always met strange, tragic ends. And John Markway has assembled a team of people who thinks he'll prove whether or not the house is haunted. So he's like a psychic investigator type person. And you know, it's a classic one. You know, I think some people would, there's people out there in the world who probably think it's the best haunted house movie. I mean, obviously it's not my favorite necessarily, but it's a great one. I watched it last year for 30 Days of Halloween. And I loved it. Like it really holds, it's really a great movie. It's a classic. Like you watch it and it actually is like creepy with very limited effects.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the way that it's filmed and the way that it's put together, it has a really creepy atmosphere, you know?
Yeah.
And certain scenes are still creepy. And you know, you watch like even you go up to newer movies like Conjuring and stuff, and there's still nods to this one, you know? And definitely is that classic kind of setup of going to this haunted mansion and creepy stuff happening, and I don't know, I'm a sucker for that, I guess. So like I think this one is a great one. It's definitely a must watch for this genre, I think.
Oh yeah, totally agree. It's it laid down the foundation for a whole bunch of films to come after this one.
Exactly. And I mean, and it's a pretty close adaptation to the original novel by Shirley Jackson, which I've read. So you know, I think it just changes a few things, but it's pretty close. And definitely a lot better than the kind of cruddy remake that they made in like 2000 or whatever.
Oh god, yeah, with Catherine Zeta-Jones and stuff.
Yeah, that one. My dad and I saw it in a theater. We walked out. We were just kind of like, "What the fuck was that?"
Yeah, even when I saw it back then, I was like, "Oh, this kind of sucks." You know.
Yeah, it started off promising, and then it just got real bad toward like the you know, the second half was real bad. But yeah, I mean, it had Liam Neeson, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Mm-hmm. Like, it had a great cast and really was promising setup, but then just was a bad movie in the end. Too much like crappy special effects and stuff. Yeah, like The Haunting, you know, is a great movie with almost no special effects, just through like the way that the film is made and the way that they use the camera and the way that actors are. It sells that there's something ominous and creepy happening. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's my number four.
All right, well, my number four ties in with what you just talked about. It's I think the Mike Flanagan masterpiece, the 2018 miniseries on Netflix, The Haunting of Hill House.
Nice. Yeah, that was on my list, but then I put it to honorable mentions because I added The Fog because I didn't have Fog in my list originally. So
it's a good swap. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, but, you can go ahead, but yeah, no, I'll tell you. Yeah.
Yeah, The Haunting of Hill House, man, is like, it starts off, you know, a bit slow, and I like slow stuff, but it just builds and builds, and it's so good, and like, the emotional connection you have with all the characters and stuff is insane, man. Like, this one really got me, and
yeah, me too.
It's not like a super scary film, but it does have some scenes in there, man, that are like, oh, fuck, that's some kind of like nightmare fuel type things. Like, that's kind of things I dream about, you know, the ghosts is being there in the background. You didn't see it. You think you caught it in the corner of your eye and it's there. There's like so many different ghosts in this place that you have to like rewatch to catch them all. You know, it's just really subtle, but really, really fucking creepy.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. That's one of my favorite parts about that movie or that miniseries is the way that he has all these subtle, like, hidden, the ghosts are just in the background, like, and you catch them in it, or like, it's so creepy. And yeah, I love this one. Like, I watched it when it came out in 2018 and over the course of a couple of days. And I mean, there's parts of it that you literally get so wrapped up in it. I don't usually get emotionally like, you know, where you like almost want to cry or something, but I felt that watching this show, you know, cause it was just very like emotional and you know, you really care about the characters. And like you said, it's kind of a slow start because the first episode is a little bit off-putting. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes you a minute to kind of get into it and figure out what's going on. But once you kind of settle into it, you know, by the end of the first episode into the second, particularly the second episode, you know, you're hooked, and it's just like you have to watch the whole thing. And the way that the plot rolls out is very like very, very well done. Very like everything's like connected in a real interesting way, like of timeline and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a real like masterclass and script writing and then plot reveal and you know how Mike Flanagan's like balancing like all these different like timelines, you know what I mean?
It's yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And it definitely, yeah. What's that?
Oh, so go ahead.
I was gonna say, and it is really creepy, you know, I think.
Yeah. The thing that really creeped me out is like, the ghost fucking with you when you're sleeping. Cause you know, when you're sleeping, that's your most like, your peaceful time there, you know, like, all right, you know, it's time to go to sleep, you know, nothing should fuck with me, you know, but and you're not on guard, you know what I mean? You're like, that's the worst time to get fucked with. And you got all these fucking ghosts messing with you while you're sleeping and shit. Like, that freaks me out.
Yeah. And I really like the mystery of what happened. You know, like, you're like, what happened to the mother and everything? Like, it really, like, keeps you intrigued right up to the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it shot so well, too. Like, god damn, it's a fucking beautiful fucking miniseries.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of Mike Flanagan's best things he's done so far.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of everything he's done so far, too. Like, he's good, you know, and that's a rarity to have, like, so many, as young as he is when it comes to film and miniseries and stuff, and to be as good as he is, like, it's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like, he's definitely, like, proved himself as, like, a modern, like, master of horror, you know?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I totally agree with that. But, yeah, that was my number four there, was The Haunting of Hill House. And that's still on Netflix because that is a Netflix original, so it's always going to be on Netflix. So that's a cool thing, I guess, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I never watched The Haunting of Bly Manor, but I know that Mike Flanagan only directed the first episode, so it wasn't quite the same where he did the whole show, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't have the same... It's not near as creepy as what this one was, but it's still really good. I definitely recommend checking it out. Like, it's still really, really well done.
Yeah, I need to get around to watching that one.
Yeah, highly recommend that. It's not as good as Haunting of Hill House, but it's still really cool. So
cool. Yeah, I need to check it out. See, so my number three is The Legend of Hell House.
Oh, cool.
From, let me double check. I think it's 1973. Directed by John Hughes, starring Pamela Franklin, Roddy McDowall, Clive Revel, and Gail Hunnicutt, and written by Robert Matheson, who wrote, you know, I Am Legend and countless like teleplays for like Night Gallery and all kinds of stuff. Richard Matheson.
Yeah.
Fucking like master. And it's based off of his novel. And I have the novel. I've read it as well. It's pretty close adaptation of the novel. So, you know, he did a good job of adapting himself. But basically, the summary is a physicist, his wife, and two mediums are hired to investigate the Belasco House, where 27 guests had inexplicably died in 1927, along with most of a team of paranormal investigators that was sent in the early 1950s. And also has Roddy McDowall in it as the one guy who survived the investigation in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this movie. I think the only thing that's a little disappointing is kind of the reveal of what's going on. But aside from that, I mean, I think it's a great. I do wish that they were able to actualize towards the end some of the things that happened in the book. But because it's pretty crazy, like. But they didn't have the money to really to do what is in the book, you know. But it's still, even with that, it's a great one. I love the set design of this movie. Of the atmosphere, and it's kind of like a good it'd be another good double feature of The Haunting. Like, they're kind of back to back, kind of like a similar plot idea and like setup at least, but very different movies in a lot of ways, you know.
Yeah.
And this one has like a very like out there, like it's very haunted and very creepy, and you know, I think it's great.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a classic too. You know, I highly recommend watching that any time of the year, you know.
Yeah, I watched it last year for 30 Days of Halloween, and I got the Blu-ray, I think Scream Factory release, which is really nice and has a good like documentary about it and stuff, and great transfer, like it's beautiful. And yeah, it's a beautiful movie, like the sets, the exteriors of the mansion that they use, like everything is, it's just like really, really drenches you in this atmosphere, you know.
Yeah, totally. Like you definitely feel this film.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so we're going to my number three, which I love this film. First time I watched it, I loved it. But it's starting to catch on with a lot of people now. They're calling it the scariest film ever made, which I don't agree with that, but still really fucking good. And that is 2012's Sinister. Directed by Scott Derrickson, not Dickerson. But Sinister is a fucking dark
movie.
Even the subject matter and everything about this one is super dark. It's even filmed really dark. Like, and I like that. Like I never seen anybody's house with such few lighting adjustments and stuff. You know, their house is super dark that they move into. I mean, my house is dark too, but. Yeah, the atmosphere in this is so fucking heavy and fucking creepy. The score is really fucking good, really dark. Trying to think of there's a band or one of the members of a band that contributed this one, but I'm having a big brain fart on this. They were a black metal band, and then they turned to like more electronic type stuff.
Over. And,
yeah, Over. Yeah, yeah.
The soundtrack is amazing. There's one of the 8mm scenes. It's the old black ambient project Agast from Norway, featured the wife of Samoth at the time, you know, from Emperor, Andrea Hagen. And then I can't remember what her name is, but she was the wife of Fenris at the time. So was the other woman in that band. And like one of the scenes, I forget which one it is. It has, I think it's the one like in the house where they're like, she's like slitting their throats or whatever, I think is the one. This is the August, and they got like Boards of Canada and and Oliver and fucking amazing soundtrack.
I love this
movie. It was one of those ones where I was kind of like borderline with it being, it's definitely a paranormal movie. But I was thinking about it. I was like, well, I don't, it is a paranormal movie and a ghost movie in a way,
Yeah.
But I wasn't 100% sure to put it on my list or not, but I'm glad you have it on yours.
Yeah. What won me over with the ghost stuff was just the, the kids that are in there. You keep seeing these kids and, the ghosts of the kids trying to help them solve, what's going on in this house. We're kind of helping them solve that, but the main villain of this kind of has control of these kids or spirits anyways, I guess, which is fucking so cool, man. Oh my God. A quick synopsis of this one, is a, washed up true crime writer, Ellison Oswald, finds a box of Super 8 home movies in his new home, revealing that the murder he is currently researching is the work of a serial killer whose legacy dates back to the 1960s.
Yeah. I love the whole setup. Like, imagine finding this box of creepy 8mm film up in your attic mysteriously, and this to watch, and the 8mm parts are the best part of the movie. Like, they're so fucking creepy, and great.
They are, like I said, that's where the soundtrack really comes in when he's watching these films, like the whole combination of creepy fucking soundtrack with 8mm and stuff. And yeah. And there's some hidden things too, when you're watching the 8mm films there, like, the main antagonist or whatever this is, Bagul. And there's like, if you look close enough, you can kind of see like there's traces of him in each of the little films that you watch, which you gotta really look for, like Bagul's always kind of there, like watching, he's there the whole time. You just don't really know it, but he's there, and he's creepy as shit. I like the design on him. Like, it's simple, but really effective,
Yeah, he kind of almost looks like a black metal guy or something in a way.
Yeah, definitely. He's got that feel to him, and it's not super outlandish, like, where it's almost comical. It's kind of like serious, like, all right, this guy means business or whatever the fuck he is. I think they trace him back to some type of demon. I think it was a Celtic demon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I forget where he's from. It's like, it's like some, or maybe Middle East or something, I forget. But yeah, he's like an ancient, like, demon, like child devouring demon or something. Like, yeah, he's cool. I love this movie. It's definitely a great one to watch.
It is, and it's streaming now up on Peacock. So if you got Peacock, it's up there. So highly recommend checking that one out, dude. Yeah, it's so good. So that was my number three.
Yep. I have like a box that for some reason it has Sinister and The Cabin in the Woods and The Possession, but the one from the Jewish Debek box movie, The Possession, not the not the 80s one, but the other one, which is a good Possession movie, I think. And I like that it was solid. I like that it was based off of Jewish mythology. I thought that was cool.
That's a really good box set you got there. That's some heavy hitters.
Yeah, it's a funny one that you could find. Yeah, the like one price for all three. And I was like, and got me. Nice. Got it like Walmart or something.
I don't even know if they still do that. I don't shop at Walmart anymore. I haven't shopped here in like 20 years just because too many fucking people deal with all that shit. So, but I used to always get DVDs every time I would go there. So I used to like the combos they would sell.
Yeah, you can find a surprising amount of cool DVD stuff at Walmart. I got like the Tales from the Dark Side box set at Walmart for like $20.
Oh man, that's a sweet deal.
yeah, definitely. So my number two. Let me see the year this came out. It's going to be the 1980 film The Changeling, directed by Peter Medak, starring George C. Scott, Trish Van Deer, DeVere, and Melvin Douglas. Its plot follows an esteemed New York City composer who relocates to Seattle, Washington, where he moves into a mansion he comes to believe is haunted. And one of the cool things about this movie is that the guy who came up with the original concept based it off of staying in, he was living here in Denver, and he was staying in this mansion that was converted into apartments downtown that I used to live next to. That was haunted. He had these haunted experiences there, and it inspired him to write the idea for this one. And you know, there's a bunch of really creepy haunted old mansions downtown. He got converted to apartments and stuff, and one of them was real creepy because we were filming a music video for my band Silver Cord downtown, where I was filming my singer, my friend Ken, sitting in front of this one mansion, and I was gonna shoot from above to get the mansion in view, and then kind of come down and come on to him sitting kind of in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was at night, and it was a clear night, but in the film it's looks like there's a fog rolling across the mansion. The whole mansion was covered in this fog in the film, in the video camera. Yeah, it was an old Super 8, you know.
Yeah.
Digital, high 8 or whatever, digital one. Yeah, it's real creepy. You look at it, you're I was looking at it in the little thing, and look around, there's no fog, but there's fog in the fucking camera, the camera, when I just when I was hovering it over this old mansion that's supposed to be haunted. But yeah, so the this movie, I think, it's a really great haunted house movie. It's very creepy. It's a classic, another classic one that gets referenced a lot, in newer movies, The Conjuring and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Certain scenes, the ball falling down the stairs and stuff. I love the seance scene in this one, which is also an element in Haunting Connecticut, was the seance stuff going on, you know, referencing early 1900s, spiritualism, which is something I find very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have a book by Arthur Conan Doyle about the history of spiritualism, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, so this movie kind of references some of that stuff. It's a little, it's a little bit of one of those ones where it's the ghost stuff is leads to kind of a mystery in a way, mm-hmm. it's unveiled, which can be hit or miss. Some movies, it's a little bit cheesy when it happens. I do kind of agree with the M.R. James idea of hauntings should maybe be a bit more unexplained, but it works for this one. There's a reason why the haunting is happening, and George C. Scott kind of goes on this trip trying to figure out what's going on, and I love him. I love George C. Scott's. So, it's just a great movie.
Yeah, totally. I'd say a good way to watch that, if it's still up on Shudder, is the Joe Bob did episode with this. And, you get to get all the cool Joe Bob facts in between the film and stuff. And that would be the ultimate way to watch it, if it's still up on Shudder, that episode. But the Changeling episode, that'd be really killer to watch if you've never seen this before.
I think it's up, because I think all the Joe Bob episodes are all up on Shudder still.
Yeah, some of them they lose when they lose their licensing for certain films and end up taking it down, but they still have the Joe Bob segments without the film up there. So hopefully the film's still up there.
Yeah, so. Hopefully. It's a great one, I think. It's a classic one in this genre, I think.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Super awesome film and great classic film. All right, so my number two is another classic, and this is probably going to be on a lot of people's number one list, for any type of genre of film, when it comes to horror, is the 1980 Stanley Kubrick film, The Shining. So.
Yep. Well, don't give away my number one, because that's my number one.
That's good. I figure we're going to be close with this one. But yeah, I'm not going to do any synopsis for this one, because everybody pretty much knows The Shining. But, man, what a killer film. Fucking Jack Nicholson, fucking Shelley Duvall. It don't get too much better than that. And it's the feeling of dread the whole time when you're watching this. Like, it's pretty immense, and this the really dark atmosphere, and it's definitely a mind fuck, man. And it's a lot different than the book, you know, ending wise and stuff like that, but it's in a good way. I like the book a lot too, but I also like this film a lot. And, you know, two different versions, both are really cool. I just think Jack Nicholson kind of just steals his show, you know, as Jack Torrance. Like, he really nails that role, man. Like, you can feel the fucking evil seeping out of him, you know?
Yeah, I love this movie. Like, you know, it's definitely, I think, the reason why it's my number one is just because I think that it's just like it's a classic. It's a great haunted movie. At the time, I guess it's a haunted hotel, but, you know, like, hotels can be real creepy, and this movie captures that feeling of like a real creepy hotel. There's a sense of malevolence running through the whole movie. You feel like the whole movie, I feel like I'm like a ghost, the malevolent intelligence behind the haunting, like watching everything going on. You know what I mean? That's how you feel when you're watching the movie. You feel like you're like this disembodied presence that's like watching everything, you know?
Yeah, I can totally see that, especially the way how the camera follows everything around. You're kind of like a floating presence there, you know?
Exactly. You feel like there's this floating presence just following everything, and the it builds up this great tension and this real creepy like feeling, great atmosphere. The ironic thing for me with The Shining is it's more of a for me a winter horror movie. I don't watch it usually during Halloween so much, but I watch it during like December, you know, like because of how, you know, it's a very cold like winter movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the time I like to watch it too, because it is a winter movie, and adds to the atmosphere, everything, when it's cold outside. You know, we don't get a lot of snow here, you know, like once every like 10 years or some shit, but you know, even when it's just cold outside, it's still cool to watch this one here.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched the movie one of the last times I watched it was like a day we had a big snowstorm and they couldn't really go anywhere. So I was like, I'm going to put on The Shining, you know, and watch The Shining. Like, it's just a great movie. It's one of those movies I've seen like a thousand times. And every time I watch it from the opening, I get sucked in, you know, and you're sucked in and you're just watching the whole, you know, just watch the whole thing. Like, and it's always effective, you know.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think it's, you know, it's one of my favorite movies of all time, you know, and it was one of my favorite horror movies of all time, like next to like The Exorcist and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it ranks high with me as well. It's like probably my top 10 of all time for sure. And it ranks high in a lot of people's lists. Like The Shining is top notch stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a great one. I mean, you know, it's a great horror movie. It's a great haunted house movie, a great paranormal movie, and yeah, just a great movie in general. So,
oh yeah, 100%.
That's up there. Wow. So, what's your number one?
All right, let's go. My number one is one you already spoke about earlier today. I mean, earlier on the podcast, which is earlier today, but it's 1982's Tobe Hooper's Poltergeist.
Nice.
Yeah, I love Poltergeist. I've got memories of watching this back when, you know, I didn't watch it when it came out because I wasn't alive yet, but remember like being super, super young and, you know, watching it when it was on probably TV at the time with my aunt and my grandparents and stuff like that, like 5-4 years old, you know, as back as far as I can remember. And it's so good, and it's still super effective today. Like the way the special effects were used, the real skeletons that were used for this movie, like I think that's fucking cool as hell. Those are all in that pit. That's supposed to be all real skeletons and stuff. And that was some shit from Tobe Hooper's thing, you know, same type of shit he used for Texas Chainsaw. He wanted that same effect. And you can see that, like, you know, this whole movie is just super, super dark. And, you know, they said it was cursed. It was on one of the cursed film episodes on Shudder. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but it's pretty interesting.
I haven't watched it yet, but yeah, I've heard about the kind of curse of the movie. And, you know, it's definitely one of those ones like The Omen and The Exorcist and stuff that is up there with the cursed movies, you know?
Yeah, They said a lot of bad shit was happening to him. A lot of the actors and a lot of the people involved in this movie, a lot of weird shit was happening afterwards and stuff like that. Like, did they touch on something they shouldn't have touched on? You know, I think that's really cool. I like the lore behind it. You know, it's just it's solid. And I like the sequels as well, especially when the preacher comes into play. Like, man, this it goes really crazy then, like, especially in the sequels, it kind of goes off the rails, but I think they're still fun to watch. But the original, man, is fucking crazy. I think my favorite scene is with the worm type creature that comes out the dad, I believe.
Like, yeah. Oh,
like the special effects, man, this practical shit, like, oh, it's so fucking visceral and slimy and fucking, like, this is like to the extreme of what a haunted house movie should be. You know, this is even nowadays, when you look at like extreme films and stuff, like when it comes to like this making you feel fucking like horrified, this one still ranks up there.
Yeah, definitely. It's so funny too, because it was like a PG movie. And I mean, as kids, I mean, I used to watch this movie all the time. You know, it was on TV, like, you know, like, yeah. It's so funny. Yeah. Oh, this is a great one. Definitely have a lot of nostalgia for it. And it's one to watch. Like, it's a great Halloween movie, that's for sure. You know,
this also kind of like, I was telling you earlier, I was going to share a story about an old house we used to live into as a kid. This is where this relates into that. Like, this is probably back when I was from, I guess, 10 years old, a little bit up, like maybe 10 to 12 or a little bit younger than that. Anyways, we lived in this house that my grandma let us buy from her and stuff. And there's this converted garage that was converted into like a little like room and bed and all that stuff, like a little apartment type area. And that's where I would stay at. And that's where I did like video game stuff. It was like my room, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But before then, like my uncle's girlfriend at the time supposedly committed suicide in that same room area, the converted garage. And dude, even now, like, well, back then, anyway, I'd go back to this part here. Like, I would have, like, sleepovers and shit. Like, nobody wanted to sleep over in my house, man. They would always, like, say there was, like, these shadow things running around and stuff. If they were sleeping on the couch. And if we're downstairs into this, like, den area where the garage was converted to the apartment stuff, man, like, it has some weird fucking energy, dude. Like, really weird. And I have dreams about this house even till this day. And I'm fucking 37 now. I can still vividly, you know, see this place, see this downstairs, and it's always like calling to me, like the door open. We had this like weird door that led downstairs that had no lock on it, so it would just like swing open if you wanted to. You could push it open just by like barely touching it. So right. that door still swings open in my nightmares and stuff, and there's still shit coming from out of there after me constantly. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? I've lived in like a ton of different houses after this and places, but it's always this place, and I know the exact like layout of the whole house is still vividly in my head. And I was saying that's pretty weird, you know, and it's very poltergeisty, you know.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, poltergeist definitely reminds me of that kind of stuff. Like, one of my best friends growing up, like, lived in this, it's like a, on the side of the mountain, like, look out mountain, Golden, Colorado, and it's like there's like the subdivision there. And their house was like super kind of super creepy vibes in this house, particularly the basement, like had this real like creepy feeling. Like we wouldn't like to be down there at night. You know what I mean? Like, just like this. And I think poltergeist reminds me of the kind of feeling of places like that. Those kind of like real creepy suburban type of houses. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. That's, what this reminds me of with the old childhood house I was raised up in for the most part, you know. Very weird, yeah. Though, man. I'm telling you, this shit, like, I just had a dream, I think it was last night, about this place again. I'm like, how the fuck do I even remember any of this stuff, like, from this house? It's so vividly in there. I just find that very weird, man, you know.
Yeah, it made its mark. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's probably, like, some type of spiritual like energy there, you know what I mean, that just like stuck with you, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this place had some weird fucking energies, man. A lot of traumatic things happened here too, besides, you know, the suicide and all that stuff that went on in there. But there's a lot of weird shit that went on there. I have very weird family members.
Yeah, well, you know, there's there's certain places that act as kind of like vortexes of this type of energy, and affects people to do weird things. And then when people do weird things in those places, then it adds to the energy and strengthens it, and it gets worse and darker and more fucked up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And also, so, to top all that off, like my little den area down there was filled with deer heads that my dad mounted.
Oh, Jesus.
He's a hunter and stuff. So, dude, there's like at least 10 deer heads on the side of the wall there. So if I would bring friends down, or if I had I was dating somebody or whatever when I was a kid down that way, I just traumatized people because there's fucking deer heads all through there. Like, yeah, you turn the lights off. I used to have like a little black light now down there when I got a little bit older. So like the black light on, then you get all these fucking deer heads looking at you while you're watching horror movies. It was a fucking experience, man.
Yeah, does that make it even more creepy?
Yeah. I mean, you got all these fucking deer staring at you the whole time. Very lifelike, because they were very well done. Like, you spent a lot of money getting these fucking mounted and stuff. But, yeah, I'd freak people out when they come over, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I think the poltergeist capture, like, really taps into these types of things. Like, it kind of brings us... It's like kind of, in a way, the opposite of, like, like, the others. Like, I love that kind of, like, very... gothic, like British, like type of like old mansion movies, obviously. But I feel like a movie like Poltergeist is like more relatable to people like us, who our lives aren't really, haven't been spent in like old gothic mansions or something, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like tapping into like what we, our day-to-day life in a lot of ways, and the things we experience in our lives, you know?
Right. And most
of I never seen any of the I probably have seen the sequels when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But I only vaguely remember maybe the second one. So those are ones I got to revisit, as the sequels for Poltergeist.
Yeah, dude, definitely do that. And also, there's a spinoff TV show that came out in the 90s, late 90s, I think. I don't know, in my mid 90s, actually. It was called Poltergeist Legacy, I believe.
Okay.
Check that out. If you can find that streaming somewhere, check that one out too. It's pretty interesting.
Cool. I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah, they did like weird spinoff for it.
That's cool. Yeah, before we end, I have a couple honorable mentions as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, go for it.
Cool. So one was Rose Red. Which I was meaning to try to rewatch it, because I remember loving it, but I haven't seen it in a while, so I didn't feel confident putting it like in a top 10 or something. So I was like, well, I'm gonna honorable mention it, because I think it's like Stephen King's version of movies like The Haunting and Legend of Hell House and stuff like that. It felt like Stephen King's like kind of nod to those things, and I think it's a really good one. I mean I don't remember everything about it, but I remember it being really good, you know?
Yeah, I remember staying up late to watch it when I was in, I think that came out, I was in high school. Yeah, I was in high school for that one. So when it was like on actual regular TV and stuff, staying up to catch those, and I really liked them.
Yeah, I watched it on there, and I have a DVD of it now as well. So the I mean, definitely watched every episode when it came out. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Great, very atmospheric. Like the location and set is great, you know?
Oh yeah.
And then my other honorable mention is Amityville Horror.
Oh yeah, that's.
And also the sequels as well, because actually, you know, like Amityville 2, which goes into the background history of like the murder and stuff that started it all off, mm-hmm. you know, is a really great one as well. And there's something about Amityville Horror. It's not like it didn't quite make the list necessarily, but I think it's a great one, you know. And the whole story is pretty creepy, and the movie I kind of builds. Like I like it because it starts kind of small, and it takes its time and slowly builds up, and it gets more and more, like it gets worse and worse. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, I think that's a great one. Another one that kind of brings the horror home in a way, you know?
It's definitely one to watch if you're into the whole haunted house stuff. And as the sequels go on, it gets way fucking crazy. You know what I mean? But they're still pretty fun to watch. The sequels get weird, but they're still fun.
Yeah, I've watched I had a box set that has I think like the was it I forget how many sequels there are, but it has I think it's three or four, and it has like a documentary about it as well. I don't know if there's more than that. I've only watched if there is, I've only watched the first, you know, whatever, three or four or whatever. You know, I haven't watched in a while, so I don't quite remember, but I remember enjoying all of them, you know. They're fun to watch, at least. You know. The place I lived, the apartment I lived, was haunted, and that one was crazy. Like, what it was like an old bathtub. Like, one of the things that happened was there's this old bathtub, and there was like a faucet that you had to turn up to turn on, so it was like kind of hard to turn on, you know. And one day you're out sitting like watching movies or something in the living room, and all of a sudden you hear the water just turn on full blast.
Oh man.
That was one thing that happened. That was like when it really started getting worse, because what first happened was all of a sudden one day you could feel like something was creepy was happening, like the doors to like the because the bathroom was right across from the kitchen in this old like little apartment, and right next to that was like the bedroom. There wasn't a door separating the bedroom really from it. Was like it was kind of weird, like the bedroom wasn't really a bedroom, it was kind of like just a it almost should have been like the dining room or something, you know what I mean? Because it was like where it was like placed, like it didn't have a door in between it and the living room and stuff. Like it was kind of a weird space. It was like an old historic building from like the Civil War era or something. And like one day, like this like little bead just got thrown out of nowhere. All I hear a ding, 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 and there's this little bead, and I don't know, to this day I have no idea where it came from. And I it got thrown, and ding, 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 and I threw it into like a cabinet, just like at the time. And after that point, it was almost like that was like the ghost announcing it was there or something. From that point, it got worse and worse. And you could feel like it was like centered on the bathroom, and you could feel like sometimes it was almost like pitch black, like this like pitch black presence like in front of the bathroom or whatever. It was real creepy, like. Even the light would get dim sometimes, you know. You could feel like it's like presence like watching you kind of. But yeah, that and you'd hear that the bathtub thing happen. That was one thing that happened. There's a couple other things that happened was like either scratching on the walls. There was tapping sometimes, and there was one time where there was a tapping on the wall that was like real loud. Like somebody was it literally was it sound the exact same way as if somebody tapped it on the wall, you know, but there's no one there. And that was experienced by it was like had people over. It was like I think five of us were there, and we all heard it, you know. We're all just like talking, all of a sudden you hear tunk tunk tunk, and there's this like tapping sound like someone's tapping the wall. I'm like, oh, what the fuck.
Yikes.
Yeah, and like I said, I'd hear like scratching on walls and stuff. And then at one point there was one of the creepiest things that happened was the bathtub basically had like two curtains, like one behind and one in front, because it was like freestanding, like it wasn't, you know what I mean? It was like real old fashioned one. And one day it pulled back the back shower curtain on the wall behind the bathtub. It looked like there were these finger marks, this black kind of weird fluid. Like somebody was like scratching at the wall, their four fingers. Yeah, like these kind of like scratching marks, like, you know, like Freddy was like there or something, you know, like. And like a bunch, like someone was like trying to crawl out of the bathtub or something, and but like leaving this black viscous oily substance, and then you'd like wipe it away and it would just come back. I used to have pictures of it, but I lost it, 'cause but I had a bunch of pictures. I took a lot of pictures of it, and yeah, it was like somebody was like clawing at the wall or something, and the substance was, like I said, it was like this viscous oily kind of weird substance that would just you'd touch it and would just kind of evaporate. And later on, I kind of like put two and two together and realized that's probably what people call ectoplasm, you know, because it's the only thing that could make sense. Like, it wasn't anything I've ever experienced before or since. And at the height of it, when it, like, because my ex was like super scared, and I think whatever presence was there was feeding off of her fear, you know?
Yeah.
And at the worst of it, this ectoplasm stuff started like coming out of the whole fucking bathroom, like all over the walls, everywhere. It was like really bad. Yeah. And yeah, you'd wipe it away. Yeah, you'd wipe it away and then just come back. But eventually I managed to get my ex to stop being scared and stop feeding it, and got better and got more calm until we were moving out. Mm-hmm. And when we were moving out, the little bead thing all of a sudden, ding, 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 just came out of nowhere again.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, and I put it back into his fucking, into the cabinet. Like, and I was just like scratching and tapping like all the time. And yeah. And then the last night I spent there, I was just like lying in bed, like with just like all the lights on. You could just feel like this dark presence, like watching. It was like very unpleasant.
Yeah. That's no good.
So, so after that, I was like, yeah, I can't explain away any of that stuff. You know, it was definitely like, I mean, I already like was open to the idea of haunting being a real thing. And after that, I was like 100% on board. You know what I mean? Like there's something going on, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think when you've experienced stuff like that, like if you were to remain like sitting there saying, trying to explain it and trying to like just rationalize it, I think kind of being a fool in a way, because you're just closing your mind off to what's actually happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, good to stay open-minded, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you have like something happen and you think it's paranormal, but then you can show that, you know, it was just like the pipes going or something, you know, that's one thing. When you have certain experiences where it's just like very obviously not like, it's like something that you can't explain at all. And just hold experience, like really like open my eyes to, okay, like there is something real to all of this, you know? So, yeah, figured to tell you that before we close that. And since you told me about your haunted experience in your basement and everything.
Yeah. Those two stories there, I can make from some fun movies. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, I always got the feeling that maybe there was somebody who died, like a woman who died in the bathtub, like in the bathroom at some point in time. Mm-hmm. That was the feeling that I got, because it was like very centered around there. And I had like visions and kind of dreams about this, you know?
That definitely could be it, you know? That sounds like it could be, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you could take like one of those stories and turn into like a story of your house that you're telling me about. Somebody could take that and turn into like a real creepy, like haunted house movie, you know?
Yeah, maybe I should write something about it. I do like to write short stories, so maybe that's something that's been there all along I haven't wrote about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're dreaming about it and stuff, like maybe there's something about it that you can turn into a story. I think that would be cool.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me of I got two honorable mentions, and they're both from the same franchise, but it's from the 1985 film House, and also, let's see what year, also House 2, which came out in 1987. I don't know if you've ever seen those films before.
I've seen House a long time ago. I've never seen House 2, though. But yeah, those are great ones. Like, the first one's great. Yeah.
Yeah, they're both fun, and they deal with other dimensions and stuff inside in this house. Like, this house like takes you to these different places and stuff. It's really creepy. It's considered a comedy horror, which, you know, there's a lot of comedy elements in there, but some of the effects and all are pretty fucking creepy as hell. Like, some of the demons coming through and stuff. And like the army guy, the fucking demonic looking army dude, it's pretty fucking scary looking. But those are like classic haunted house films. They're almost made the list, but I'm like, I leave those for honorable mentions, but those ones are really fun, and they're streaming up on Prime right now if you got the subscription service.
Yeah, definitely. I saw that. I was like, they're on my list for last year's 30 Days Halloween, but I didn't get around to it, so I think maybe this year I will. Yeah. Because I've never seen House 2, and it's been so long since I saw House 1, I don't remember it too well, but I remember the effects are really great. Like, the creature design is amazing.
Yeah, And now House 2 is just as good as the first one. Like, it doesn't skip a beat at all. Like, they're fucking great.
Yeah, and they're, you know, I remember the first one. It's like, yeah, there's a comedy element, but it's like a real dark comedy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely dark comedy.
But it almost reminds me of, like, Evil Dead 2 type of vibe.
Yeah, it does have that feeling to it. Yeah, I could see that.
Like, kind of like, it's horror, but it's got this kind of, like, deranged, like, kind of comedic element to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you should do a double feature of that one for sure coming up. You know, it'd be fun.
Yeah, I'll have to, it'll be on my list for, you know, I'm probably going to get started on the 30 days before even the September, you know?
Oh, hell yeah. I would, man. Shit, November, I mean, fucking September, all that stuff. Start you hard 30 days early, do 60 days of horror, you know, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, all the Halloween stuff starting to get in the stores and the spirits are opening. And my friends and I, like, went to go hit a bunch of the, check out a lot of Halloween stuff the other day. And, you know, it's getting to be that time, you know?
Oh, yeah, the best time of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. Like, you know, September, October is like my favorite time of year because it's just like I love fall. I love Halloween. I love like going around and seeing all the Halloween decorations everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And it feels like that feeling of like the way that I would like the year all year, you know, because like I'd be happy if there's Halloween decorations everywhere all year, you know, but you only get it for a month. But it's like one month out of the year that the world kind of like is, and I are on accord, you know what I mean?
Yeah, our house stays with Halloween shit all year long. Whatever we buy during Halloween time stays up all year here, so.
Yeah, that's how I am too. Like, I mean, a lot of my decoration in my house is like Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can find a lot of cool like home decor for Halloween as well, you know.
Most definitely.
It's not really too different for me. Like, I mean, pretty much the only thing I watch is horror movies, but but I mean, I try to like make sure to like watch more, like try to, you know, even if you can't watch it every day, like some days I'll watch two movies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I have enough time. The makeup for the days that I only watch one or whatever, but it's just good to like really do that and get in the Halloween spirit.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do, and you know, definitely like doing it during October season, even though I watch horror fucking all year long. But it's just I don't know, it's fun. So something to do for the Halloween times.
Yeah, it's just and yeah, I have like my movies that I watch every Halloween as well. Like I said, like House on Haunted Hill, both the original remake, I watch pretty much every October. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you got your hand. I don't know if you have something like that that you watch every Halloween.
Oh yeah, I got an episode on that. It's coming out in the middle of October. I recorded where we talk about our favorite movies to watch during Halloween. So I don't want to give any of that away yet, but I got some good ones on there, I think.
Oh yeah, I'll be looking forward to that.
Well, this has been fucking great, man. I enjoy talking horror with you all the time, and you know, because I've done your podcast, and now when we did Hellraiser, now did my podcast with the ghost movies. So fucking cool shit, man. Fucking love it.
Definitely, dude. It's been great, and thank you for having me on. And you know, I'm sure we'll be doing some more stuff in the future. So.
Oh hell yeah, dude. No, I hope you have great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Cool, dude. Thank you. Have a great night.
Later.
Bye.